People are demanding more from life, and many of the old scripts they inherited are outdated and bring nothing but anxiety and stress. Does this sound familiar? Individuals in the world itself are experiencing a tremendous shift in energy and consciousness, and while unsettling at times, it can be the ride of a lifetime if navigated properly. That's where this show, Mind to Heart, with me, Craig Richardson, carves a pathway from your mind to your heart to activate that innate compass to overcome whatever life sends your way. So won't you join me for this powerful, inspirational, and fun experience? And let the journey begin.
Hi, my name is Craig Richardson. Welcome to Mind to Heart. I'm delighted today to have my guest, Ray Mathis, who I will introduce shortly, and I apologize to her already since this is my first show. My introduction is going to be a little bit longer to get to Ray, but she's a wonderful person who has a great story to tell, and so we will get to her. Again, my name is Craig Richardson. I was born and brought up in the Boston area. I'm a New Englander. My family goes back several hundred years. My Irish family, a little less. And I grew up in a political family, which not surprisingly ended me in up in Washington, D.C., where I spent about 30, 35 years working in and around the city. This show will be primarily dedicated to spiritual journeys, and I can assure you and guarantee you already that there will be no political discussions, which I think we can all sort of put on the shelf for a while anyway. But this is going to be taking a deeper look at who we are as humans. And my personal journey started, I would say, significantly in 1998 when I had my first son, my first child. And I think that's a natural time for people because you suddenly realize that what's going on around you isn't all there is to life. And I think more significantly, you have now another human being to be responsible for. So I looked around, and in 2000, I made an official journey into the Catholic Church. And my dad was raised Catholic and my mother was Protestant. And we were what I was referred to as C&E Christians, Christmas and Easter, growing up. But as a good friend of mine said, in 2000, most people were leaving the Catholic Church, and I ended up going the other way, which is also a hallmark of my journey. My father used to joke that there's a right way, a wrong way, and then there's Craig's way. And I think that's symbolic of my journey. I really enjoyed the church itself, the traditions, the trappings. Became very interested in the orders themselves. In fact, Ray may recall I did a paper on St. Teresa of Avila. So I still love to follow the saints and the Christian calendar. And I ended up getting a master's in Catholic theology in 2006 and went to daily mass and was very active. Around 2015, I started questioning some of the tenets of the faith. I think most difficult I had was the whole concept of original sin and heaven and hell, and are we going to stay there forever? And it seemed like a long time for me to wait, but it opened a door for me to allow me to look at other spiritualities, and for that I am forever blessed. I started reading the Bhagavad Gita, I looked at alchemy, I looked at some other Eastern philosophies, dabble a little bit in alchemy. I didn't blow the house up, but I did dabble a little bit in it, and ultimately found a spiritualist church, which taught about the continuity of life through mediumship. And it was there that I discovered Edgar Cayce, and we'll hear more about. Edgar Cayce was a prophet. They call him the father of holistic medicine. And I'll let Ray expand a little bit more on that because she too has been brought to her spiritual path through Edgar Cayce. And it was through Edgar Cayce and studying him that I found the university that he founded called Atlantic University. Where I've just finished up a master's in transpersonal psychology. And my first guest today was one of my mentors. That's what we call them there. They weren't professors, they were mentors. And Ray had a very big influence on the direction and quite honestly of where I am today in terms of the show. I kidded her because she gets the award for having the most classes with me. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. We'll have to hear from her, but I had her for three courses. all three were awesome. The one I took in the spring was on your life's purpose. And then this last semester was on mythology, which is really why I wanted to bring Ray in today, because when you look at mythology and you look at things like the hero or the heroine's journey, you get to see some themes and some concepts that really drive all of our lives and always have. I think that's one of the interesting things when you look at somebody like Joseph Campbell, is that they looked at mythologies around the world and there was a lot of continuity. There's a lot of similarities. So without much ado, I would like to bring in my guest, Ray. Ray Mathis, I will get more into her actual life story. But Ray, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today on my first broadcast. It's always great to have somebody along for the ride when you're starting out, whether it's driving a car for the first time or whatever, and you're brave to be here. So welcome, Ray. I thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's great to be here, Craig. You were one of my star students, so I'm going to enjoy talking about all of this that we discussed in classes. So,
well, Ray, one of the things that really struck me this last semester, and I want to start with Joseph Campbell, and I throw his name around now like I've known, like he and like Joe and I are buddies forever, right? And you know, but I personally didn't know about him until you assigned us that Bill Moyer's 6-part series filmed in the late 80s shortly before Joseph Campbell passed away. But for those who may not know him, can you just give a little snapshot about who he was and what his impact was on our culture?
Well, he, I guess you would say, was a mythologist. He was a prolific writer. He was a professor at Sarah Lawrence College all of his adult life. And he wrote, and he was not really the first person to recognize the hero's journey, but he was probably the first to popularize it. And a lot has been written about the hero's journey. He studied mythology in every culture and wrote numerous books. And in every culture, he found this same theme, that the hero would go into a dark forest or go into the underworld and have to fight a dragon or have some impossible task to do. And in doing that, if he was fighting a dragon, you know, dragon sits on a pile of gold. So he would get some gold and then he would return. And the gold really symbolizes parts of ourselves that we have not had access to before. And so it enables us to expand our lives, expand our horizons. And when you return from the journey, you don't just sit down and enjoy your gold. Your task then is to get out into the community and do something with that gold. Otherwise, it's wasted. And of course, there are people who don't return for whatever reason, or they return and they don't bring their gold with them. You know, sometimes I've known clients who get depressed and they get out of the depression, but they don't really look at what was going on and how they got into the depression. So they don't really ever get that gold. And often they are, I hate to use the word doomed, but they have to go back. They will go back periodically. It's like the universe says, you know, we're going to set this up so you can do this one way or the other, one time or another.
So you do it now, or you're going to have to come back and do it again if you're believing.
Yeah, right? Sorry, I get carried away.
No. I mean, it's interesting. And in the course materials, and you were always wonderful about putting those PowerPoints together for our class to set the weeks up. Just to get sort of dig down a little bit more on, because there's a formula, right, for the whole hero's journey. You talked about some of those stages, but I remember, and I actually kept that PowerPoint where you had it was an arc of sorts. You know, you have the call and all that. Can you just touch a little bit about that?
There are actually 17 stages.
Oh my gosh.
In that cycle. And, it would bore us to death to go through all of them. But generally, they have to do with the departure. Something will happen. that a person will suddenly be taken out of their everyday world. And then the initiation, which is, of course, going into the underworld, some type of initiation. And even one of the stages is meeting the goddess. And I think that has to do with the meeting that side of our, the feminine. In our culture, we're a very masculine-oriented culture. And so I think it has a lot to do with meeting the feminine, what Jung would call the anima or the animus, depending. And you mentioned alchemy. It has to do, what Jung talked about alchemy a lot with regard to the marriage of the king and the queen. And the result was the birth of the divine child, which is our creativity. So I think that meeting of the goddess is really important now in our culture, as we see the rise of the feminine. Women have had the feminine projected onto them. Men have had the masculine projected onto them. But I'm an astrologer. I know you haven't said that yet. But in astrology, if you're looking at someone's astrological chart, they have feminine and masculine planets and signs in their chart. So everybody has access to that. If they learn how to access it, if they don't just kind of swallow the cultural mythology without examining their own. So,
sure. And we're going to take our first break in about a minute or so. But I think you've touched upon a very important topic that I'd like to get back to, you know, maybe going off course, but something you mentioned. And that is the balance of the masculine and feminine. I mean, I think that's ultimately, you know, part of where we all need to go, whether we, you know, we're women or woman, we may need to have some more masculine. I mean, it's not what our culture has taught us. So when we get back from the break, I'd like to try to dive into that a little bit more, if you can bear with us while we take our first break. Thank you, Ray.
You know, marriage is not always easy, but skills that improve communication go a long way. Tune in to The Relationship Rehab Show, Recovering Happiness in Your Love with Nancy Landrum and Dr. Pat each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Nancy is an author and teacher empowering couples to create and sustain loving marriages. Learn to listen, speak, and handle conflict with respect so your love can flourish. To learn more about Nancy and her work, visit NancyLandrum.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Goldstein, and here's a Coffee with the Universe tip. Ever wonder why you want to go to the gym more, for example, but you just can't make it happen? You find yourself rearranging your underwear drawer instead of getting in the car. If this sounds like you, you might have caught a case of the shoulds. Maybe you think you should lose 20 pounds to fit back into your favorite pair of jeans, or that you should be healthier in general. It all sounds good, but deep down, you just aren't into it. Truth is, making choices from shoulds just leads to guilt, resentment, and a whole lot of procrastination. So take a good look at your goals. Are you shoulding yourself anywhere? If so, give yourself permission to let it go. For more insights like this, tune into my Transformation Talk radio show called Coffee with the Universe. It's a live call-in show. I'd love to support you.
Mind to Heart with me, Craig Richardson, carves a pathway from your mind to your heart to activate that innate compass to overcome whatever life sends your way. As an intuitive life coach, I am ready to guide you to an amazing life. Tune in live every second and fourth Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about me, visit CraigERichardson.com.
Transition, simultaneously the most difficult and vital part of the human experience. Without change, how would we grow? Tune in to Grounding Into Your Radiance with Stacey Barber every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Step into your truth and allow the light into your life. For more information about Stacey and her services, visit StaceyBarber.com. That's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E, Barber.com.
Hi, welcome back to Mind to Heart with Craig Richardson. Again, I'm delighted to have my guest, Ray Mathis, who was my mentor at Atlantic University. And in order, if you would like to get a hold of Ray, her email is raymathis, that's R-A-Y-E-M-A-T-H-I-S, 22 at gmail.com. Raymathis22 at gmail.com. My website is craigerichardson.com. Ray, thanks for hanging in there and coming back. Before the break, we talked about, and this will get into your some of your Carl Jungian background, but you talked about the need for, you said that the culture or our scripts sort of push this masculinity or femininity onto us, whether we're male or female. And some of our journey, is it not, to try to discover who that, what balance or what portion of that is truly us personally, individually. And I know we've broken a lot of barriers in the last 50, 30, 40, 50 years. So can you talk a little bit about that balance that we were talking about?
Okay. Thinking back about what I said when I was talking about the feminine had been projected onto women, the masculine onto men, but really the women live out the masculine as well, because we're in a masculine culture. Many women are not really in touch with the feminine any more than the men are. So we all have work to do in that regard. And I think that is happening, you know, in the culture. I think the Me Too movement and some of the other things that are coming up now, we're in a time period between the Piscean age and the Aquarian age. And so a lot of chaos, a lot of things are changing. And I think that's one of them that's going to be arising and giving us the opportunity for more wholeness within ourselves.
Well, and obviously, because I think women have obviously were the ones where it was a patriarchal world, but, you know, men too, I think being on that side of it have had to, I wouldn't say adjust, but, you know, I know that amongst my friends, there's a lot more sort of, you know, bear hugging and things and being a little bit more open and I'm certainly, you know, tell my children I love them probably a lot more than my dad did. It wasn't that he didn't. It was a different type. So I think, you know, we see that as well with the male. And it's interesting. I'm watching the BBC show. It's been called Poldark. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It was filmed right after they were actually the British side. They lost the war to America. With the way BBC does, it's a wonderful production, but you see a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, very linear lines between the males and the females and the roles they play. So I do think we've come a long way in talking about their hero's journey. And you mentioned some of the themes that Joseph Campbell and how he weaved that through some of the mythology that he uncovered. Let's talk a little bit about how our culture has presented that. And I know, as I said, you may have mentioned already, you know, your son is in Hollywood. And so you and I talked about that, the course you want to run, which I really recommend that you do when you look at mythology in our current art, which is really Hollywood. So can you talk about maybe some of the movies or some of the ways that hero's journey that you described has been presented in pop culture or whatever dramatic culture?
Well, it is probably, you could probably find it in every major movie. Star Wars, of course, is the big one. And George Lucas had Campbell as one of his mentors doing the Star Wars. You know, another one that we don't think about is that the life of Jesus was the hero's journey. I mean, he certainly went into the underworld and he died and then he returned. And so he has the whole stage there of the hero's journey. And so it's been a popular, it's in, you know, obviously in mythological themes, it's in fairy tales, it's in books that you read. Many of the stories, you can probably think of more movies than I can at this point.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a movie buff, but well, and for me, actually, just to mention a couple, because I think one of the important exercises for people to see who they relate to. So for me, so some of the epic ones are Hunger Games with Jennifer Lawrence as Katniss. And then Game of Thrones is Jon Snow. I've kind of labeled myself the reluctant hero. I don't generally want to do things, but sort of get dragged into doing them. And I think equally important, Ray, is I found that looking at the very characters, and this is more your Jungian, looking at the characters that you despise, because, you know, there's the old expression goes, there's a fine line between love and hate. And there are elements of that character that you despise because they are elements of your shadow self. Isn't that what Jung would say?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to get too far off the track, but as I said previously, we're moving from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. And Jung wrote a book called Ion, that where he looked at the changing of the ages historically. And he saw that in each age, we had an image of God. For instance, in the Taurian age, the image of God was the bull, and they worshiped the bull. They worshiped Apis, the bull. In the Piscean age, Pisces is very idealistic. They want perfection. And so we had to have a perfect God. And what happened is that the shadow fell into the unconscious. And so it really split. We were not able to hold the yin and the yang, like the Eastern, some of the Eastern religions do. And of course, Jung predicted this time period. He said, when we move, when we start to change the ages, that shadow is going to come up. And it's fascinating. And I'm not going to touch on politics, but January the 6th is the Epiphany.
Oh, that's right.
Christian religion. And that was the revelation of God. And so I think the other side of God has presented itself. And it's also in the East, the Epiphany commemorates the baptism of Jesus. So there's a lot of water rituals. And I noticed that they discharged a lot of fire extinguishers. There was a lot of water blessing. There was a blessing of the house. That's what the water rituals were, is they had blessings of the house. Oh. So these are synchronistic events that I think are really important. It's not that one causes the other, but there are connections, I think, that we need to really look at. It's like looking at the shadow of our culture.
Well, it's interesting. You said there are connections. It seems like these never really go away. I mean, we think they do. And I think the way that modern culture teaches us is sort of episodic, and things aren't linear, or things there isn't. But they really are. And you mentioned the Jesus's journey. And I think really, if you look at Genesis, I mean, that's the ultimate hero's journey, is it not? I mean, they were in paradise with God, and then they get, it's not really a call, they got booted out. And so that journey ever since has been a journey to try to get back to paradise, to try to get back to unity with God. So it seems to operate on multiple levels, is it not?
That's a good point. So it's the soul's journey as well as our individual journey when we're in the earth. So
well, and I think this is where I like to try to bring it back to sort of the themes of the show is, what are these journeys, these heroes' journeys or heroines' journeys? Like I said, I mean, I have a strong affinity for Katniss Everdeen or Jon Snow, or even, you know, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. I don't know which one the line. I actually played King Monkey in the play in third grade, but, you know. What does that say about us personally if we have an affinity or a revulsion too? I mean, how does that impact? What is that cluing us into our own journey?
Well, I think we can learn a lot. Most people go through some kind of crisis in their life. This is life. We have crises. But a lot of times we go through crises and then we get out the other side and we keep on going and we don't really look at what's happened. In psychology and in the spiritual life, the purpose for a crisis is to learn more about yourself and to expand your world and become, as Jung talked about, becoming more whole. So I think that learning about this process, Campbell's process of the hero's journey, is extremely, it's certainly been extremely helpful to me in accepting, I think, the crises that I've been through, and realizing that there's a reason. They're not just useless. They're not things I just want to get through and forget, but they're extremely important. So.
Yeah, I think those, you know, the term that I used when I had my own experience that I attached to because it was a little softer was a midlife transition as opposed to a midlife crisis. But I agree with you. And I think, you know, Jung talks about having to go through that. It really strips everything away. It strips away all the falsities. It strips away all those narratives like you and I, you know, you had presented in this course, our personal mythology, and allows us, I think, to allow what Jung would call our more authentic self to come out. And he discusses that process of individuation. We are coming up on another break here shortly, but before we do, I wanted to, you know, take this opportunity to say that in the next segment, we're going to now segue from the hero's journey or the heroine's journey to Ray's journey, because you've got a, I didn't realize that you were work for NASA in part. And, you know, you talk about the movements and of the women and all. I mean, you are, you know, certainly represent to me a pioneer in that. And we'll get more into how you broke the mold, as I said, when I asked you to do this show on multiple levels. Again, to get a hold of Ray, I'll try to get this email correctly this time. It's Ray Mathis, R-A-Y-E. M-A-T-H-I-S 22 at gmail.com. And to reach me, I've got a website up. It's craigerichardson.com. So Ray, on the other side of the break, we'll start in South Carolina, and we'll see where we end up.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to transformationtalkradio.com or visit Susan's website at susandolce.com.
Hi, I'm Trish Laub from A Cup of Comfort, where we talk about Care Hero topics that nobody wants to talk about. Here's your Care Hero tip of the day. During all Care Hero journeys, the need to keep track of a lot of information arises, some of it critical. Possibly the greatest challenge Care Heroes face is the gathering and organizing of information. Just as every trade has a power tool, whether an electric drill or a laptop, my family's Care Hero power tool was the three-ring binder. We generated a mini library of labeled three-ring binders, one for each category of information, complemented with additional spiral notebooks used to detail medical appointments and episodes. This unfussy and convenient system of binders helped my family stay organized and able to deliver the dignified care and end of life my parents desired. Tune into my show to learn more. See you on the second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 12 Pacific here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at info@trishlaub.com.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death? From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuyper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Hi, my name is Diane McClay. I'm comfortable being in front of people. How to make things work in a structured format made me feel a little nervous. Everybody I have worked with on the Transformation Talk team met me with enthusiasm. Their confidence in me spilled over to me and allowed me to just grab onto it and say, oh yeah, that's me and I can own it. Thank you for showing up for me. Thank you for allowing me to put my gifts into the world, and thank you for making me look good while I do it.
Welcome back to Mind to Heart with your host, Craig Richardson. And my guest, Ray Mathis. We were talking for the first half of the show after I got through the introduction about the whole general concepts of the hero and heroine's journey. And as I said up front, I really am delighted that Ray joined me so she could provide that expertise that she has in all of this. But I don't think there's any better way to show how this plays out than to talk about somebody's life. And not only was I extremely impressed with Ray as a mentor, but then I got a whole, you know, I knew some of her background. I knew she was into astrology, and I knew that she had studied Edgar Cayce and found Edgar Cayce in the 1960s and raised as a Southern Baptist. And so as I said to her when I first invited her on, that she certainly had broken a number of molds. I mean, she was on the, you know, forefront of the women's movement, even though she may not have thought of it that way, but clearly was. So I'd like to bring Ray back in, and if you could start at the beginning with your life's journey. And you know, I know you're from South Carolina, but maybe we can start there, where you grew up.
Okay. Well, I was born and grew up in Greenville, South Carolina, and I attended college there. I was in a Southern Baptist family, as you might imagine. I attended Furman University, which at that time was a Southern Baptist university. It's not any longer. And so I was pretty steeped in that. My parents were very religious, and they were also very spiritual. Mm. They expressed their spirituality through the Southern Baptist religion. They grew up on farms, and the church was their social place. That was the only place mm-hmm. they had to socialize. So it was still that, as you know, I came into the picture. And so I feel like in many ways I've stood on their shoulders with regard to finding my own personal mythology or my own personal spirituality. But married my husband, and we both, he was an engineer. I graduated in mathematics.
Did you meet him at Furman or?
Uh-huh. At Furman. I had a degree in math. And so we got offers of jobs, both of us, with NASA here in Virginia, Langley Research Center.
What year was that, Ray?
That was 63. I graduated in 61. He graduated in 62. And January of 63 is when we came up here.
Well, that was, I mean, sadly, we had lost President Kennedy, but that was not too long after he announced that he was going to have the first person on the moon, right?
Right, right. We were, just very involved in that whole process. I mean, our own little tiny piece of it. But we were here when Kennedy was shot. That was in November of 63, I think. And we had come in February. And so I worked there for 7 years until my son was born. I was fortunate.
Let me just ask you, because I think this is an important point about your journey. Mm-hmm. Don't mean to cut you off, but so what was it? I mean, so, you know, we saw Apollo 13 and stuff. I mean, that was primarily, when you see that, those a lot, they're mostly men and all that. What was that like for you to come? I mean, there couldn't have been very many women that were engineers, rocket scientists, or whatever you wanted to call yourself. I mean, that must have been pretty, you had your husband there, but I mean, it must have been pretty daunting in a way.
Right. Yeah, there were no women in the office that I worked in. They were all men, all engineers. It was interesting because I came in, they hired me to learn about computers. They were doing all their calculations by hand. And of course, I had graduated in mathematics and had never seen a computer. They just were not around then. So I had to get on a bus. I had to go across the Langley. We were at Langley Research Center, Langley Air Force Base, to the computer center. And I apprenticed myself to one of the hidden figures, and Dot Baum, and she was one of the three in the movie. And I remember, this is a topic, of course, that's very timely, but I remember walking in the room that day, and it was a huge room, and it was all Black women. And I remember thinking to myself, this is going to be interesting. Me, a white Southerner from South Carolina, brilliant women, just every one of them were brilliant. But Dot taught me everything that I knew at that point about, and of course, I was learning to program because we didn't have software you could order from the app store. We had to write all of our program. I had a boss. My supervisor was just a fascinating guy. He was very psychic. He was the one that handed me the book, There is a River, about education. I remember the moment, you know, that he handed that book to me. But I would do computer programs, and they weren't running right. And, you know, you make a mistake, and it doesn't work. And he would dream about where the error was.
Oh, my gosh. Sounds like
he would come in the office, and he would say, all right, I think I know where the error is. So it was
the problem asking where sources were.
It was like I jumped into this pool of the unknown that I had never been exposed to before.
Oh, that's
Then, of course, handing me the book on Edgar Cayce. And that was, you know, that was kind of the beginning.
And then you mentioned that your son was born. What was that, 1970?
He was born in 69.
Okay.
So, you know, then I left. I quit the job because I wanted to stay home with him. And so for the next, I guess, 9 or 10 years, I was, my husband says I was never at home, but I was at home. In that time period, I read everything I could get my hands on Cayce and Jung, and I got interested in astrology. So that 10 years was really very fertile for me.
And it's almost kind of like Jesus's quiet years. We don't know what he did, but we know he came.
Yeah. It was a very unique opportunity to have that time. And of course, as soon as I started learning about Cayce and astrology, I started telling everybody about it. And oh boy, did I get some feedback. You can imagine how much my Southern Baptist family appreciated. Well,
I was going to ask you about that. And I don't think it's really any different than the Catholic Church too. I mean, I downplay that with my old, you know, mass buddies, but, you know, and I try to, when I have an open conversation, and I know you'll appreciate this. So, you know, everything we talk about in the esoteric world is in the Bible. I mean, King Saul went to a medium to find out why this upstart David knew who he was. I mean, you know, there's always those conspiracy theories that the Vatican has been using psychics forever. So what was that like for you when you went back to Greenville? And
My family tolerated me, but they were very worried about me. I think that was it. They were worried about me. My dad said, you know, you can become so open-minded that your brains fall out. That was his comment. And I can't say they never wanted to know anything about astrology, anything about their chart, nothing. It was just an unspoken topic. I finally learned to keep my mouth shut, you know. It's interesting, though, of course, I can't say that they ever changed, and they're gone now. But in the process, my husband stayed to work at NASA for his whole work life. And in the early days, I would mention something. We'd go to a party or whatever, and I might mention astrology, and people would back up and do everything to put the sign of the cross in my face. Things are changing. I mean, now we're mostly going to funerals, unfortunately, now. Yeah. But people are interested. They lean forward, and they're very curious. So I do see a huge change in the culture with an openness. And I think people they're losing their own. Our collective mythology is kind of disintegrating. We really don't have one at this point to hold us together. And that's why maybe things are fragmenting. And so I think people are looking, you know.
I'm certainly a subject of that. It's interesting. When my dad passed away, he was kind of what I would call a split family from that era in Boston. His mother was Catholic, Irish Catholic, and his father was blue blood Protestant. And I think a lot of his journey and a lot of his struggles were to try to bring these two halves of himself. It wasn't easy. As he put it, you learned to be pretty tough when you went to a parochial school in third grade and your name was Morris Howe Richardson IV, as he's around the Murphys and the yeah. Connors and all the rest and the Kellys. Yeah. But it seems to me, and we're going to take a break in a minute or so, but what I want to get back into is that rub. And I think it takes to me, and that's such a heroine's role to play. And I don't know, I'm sure your husband may have learned to kind of try to kick you under the table or something, but for you, this was so much a part of you, we're now in a period where these institutions, but I grew up, so I was born in 62 and I remember this. I mean, it wasn't like it is now. I mean, and this is even in Boston. And so when I get back, I want to talk a little bit more about how you were able to, you know, keep those two halves of who really were yourself. You came out of Greenville, and I mentioned to you before, my son is at Clemson, not too far down the road. And I've gotten to really enjoy this other South Carolina hospitality. And I see in you somebody who not only held on to that tradition, but then were brave enough, you probably didn't know it at the time, but you were kind of going where the culture was, and probably part of your soul's purpose was to kind of help bring other people along. So when we get back, let's pick that up after the break, and we'll see you in a minute or so.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Juggling life's relentless demands can leave us unbalanced and restless. Do you feel stuck in the overwhelm? Diane McClay is a personal empowerment coach, author, and compassionate storyteller on a mission to boost you into balance and help you move forward with passion and purpose. Get unstuck with Diane on The Diane McClay Show every second and fourth Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Diane, visit DianeMcClay.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Mind to Heart with Craig Richardson, your host, and my guest today, Ray Mathis. Again, to get a hold of Ray, her email is raymathis22@gmail.com. And my website is craigerichardson.com. And there's a tab on the top there that can take you to Mind to Heart. We were talking about Ray's pioneer moments as she discovered mediumship and Edgar Cayce and all the things he talked still while growing up. And you can talk a little bit more, but you've kept your Southern Baptist roots, which wasn't, I'm sure, very easy. So can you pick up there again about, you mentioned how people, you either learn not to open your mouth or your husband somehow was able to corner you away from some people But talk a little about how you were able to, I mean, you must've been some moments where, did you feel split at all? I mean, how did that feel to you?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I got to where I wouldn't tell anybody what I was doing because I was getting such major reactions. So, it felt very, very split off. It was very painful not to be able to share my whole self with my family and with friends. And so it was a lonely period, I think. And then, after about 10 years, I decided to go back to school and I went in clinical social work. And then after that, I did study at the Jung Institute in Switzerland.
Did you go to Switzerland?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. From 82 to 86.
Oh, wow.
I would go over one semester a year. And so I really went over the first time to study with Jung's daughter, who is an astrologer. She had been an astrologer since she was 16. And she was in her 80s. And I worked with Aniala Yaffe. She was my analyst, and she was the one who wrote Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. She was Jung's private secretary. And I worked with Dora Koff, who did sand play therapy. I was pretty depressed when I went because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had gotten to the point where I was so immersed in all of this, and I just had no idea where I was going with it. And I feel like I kind of walked into the arms of the feminine. All three of those women were in their 80s, and it was a very important time period for me.
So it wasn't just learning, they were spiritual guidance.
Absolutely. I was doing analysis, and so I was just immersed in trying to figure out who I was and what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
So that was your midlife transition then?
That was my midlife. And it was difficult. It was difficult on our marriage because I was gone and I had a son who was like an early teenage years. I felt really guilty, but I felt like it was also good because it kind of forced my husband and my son together. Where my husband had been working and, you know, I had been the one at home, and now he had to do all those things that I had been doing at least for 3 months. So it was, that was my midlife time period, was all then trying to figure out what I was going to do. And
he was learning his anima and you were learning your animus.
So. Yes, I guess you could say that. Right. But it was a fascinating time also, though, to meet those people who had been close to Jung. Of course, Jung was dead by that time. He died in 61. So
an interesting, because I've through your courses and I've taken others at American Atlantic University, that to me is a wonderful layer to add on, that Jungian layer onto Edgar Cayce and his, you know, abilities, Edgar brought across from being in trance. And it seems that Jung really provides, and I think I may have written in one of the posts or in our paper, you know, we would have been psychology would have been far different if we'd been, you know, rested everything on Jung and not on Freud. What did that piece particularly bring to your other, I mean, you mentioned astrology and some of the other, what did the Jung piece bring to your journey?
Well, I think it really helped me obviously, first and foremost, to understand some things about myself, and also to understand where my family was coming from, you know, and my parents, and it just gave me a whole different perspective on relationships and what they mean in your life. You don't just walk off and leave somebody because they don't believe like you do. You're together for a reason. And that's why I like to think about standing on my parents' shoulders, because I really feel like I did, in many ways. They were They were tremendously supportive. They believed in education and education for women, which was not that, you know, was not that strongly held a belief in the South at that time. You grew up to get married and have a family.
Right.
And so they certainly encouraged us. I knew that was the most important value to them, was that I get an education. And so they were very supportive in so many ways that I can't forget that, that support. But then I had to find, you know, I had to find my own personal mythology. Their mythology was the church and was religion, and the Baptist religion. And I just found that that was not my mythology. I could stand on the shoulders, but I had to find my own personal belief system. And that was, I think, recognizing that and recognizing that I didn't have it was part of feeling depressed in that midlife period. I just didn't know. I didn't have a mythology to hang my hat on. And that's the
period in the show, whether it's Katniss Everdeen is in the Hunger Games and it's pouring rain on her and she's, you know, underneath.
Yes.
Or in Lord of the Rings, he thinks all is lost. I mean, we have to go through that, do we not? I mean, that's right. That's as much a part, as I said, that strips away everything.
Yeah.
You know, it leaves us bare. I mean, and as I said before, I think what's wonderful about your story is that, you know, as I think you told me, so the church and the traditions and all have, you know, they've modified. I mean, we're in 2021 now, and you told me that they even asked you at your Baptist church to teach a class on astrology. So they've yes. moved as well, right?
Yes, that was my Sunday school class. I had a very forward-looking Sunday school class, and I taught astrology for about 6 weeks. At that time, it was a Southern Baptist church. Now it has broken away from the Southern Baptist, but still, my family, I think because I do speak some and do some teaching, that they have asked me to speak at funerals. I'm the family speaker that tells right. about the family connection to whomever. So I've often, you know, kind of internally smiled and wondered what, and it's been in different churches, but it's always been Southern Baptist churches, what they would think if they knew that this was an astrologer standing up here talking about this person at their funeral. But so you never know, you know, it's a little bit like my husband and I'm trying to think which one it was. There was one of the shots, space shots, where they took people's signatures. You could sign something and they yeah. would take your autograph. I can't remember now the name of the shot, but anyway, so we did that, and I always thought it was neat that an astrologer snuck aboard that flight.
Well, we only have about a couple minutes left before we got to wrap up, but you know, that seems like it is. It seems to me like you shot for the moon, literally, and you were part of that moon. And what I'm most impressed about your journey is that, you know, you mentioned that you had your moments, right? You had your dark night of the soul or the Garden of Gethsemane, but you never faltered on who Ray Mathis was ever. And I think a little bit like I mentioned with my father, you were able to take the beauty of what we inherited. And this kind of worries me a little bit about, like you said, our culture doesn't have a lot of myths, and we're easy, too easy, in my opinion, to be dismissing and throwing things away. And so much of what, you know, as the institutions and the roles and the patriarchal structure changes to more of a horizontal one, which is all about Aquarian.
Yeah.
I think what you've demonstrated in your appearance here today is that in the end, it's not about the bricks and mortars, but it's about the individuals and it's the people and the journey. So I appreciate your coming on today. You mentioned astrology. I've taken one of your courses, but I have to admit, it's a little like me trying to learn a new language, which was never easy the first time around. But Ray offers a wonderful course. Again, if you get her email at raymathis22@gmail.com, I'm on her monthly, you send a newsletter out. So we can do that. She offers that as an e-class, she calls it, and Atlantic University, Edgar Casey's another way to find Ray. I strongly recommend, even if you just pick up one of these classes, you don't have to get into the full master's program. But Ray, any final points of wisdom in the last couple of seconds we got here?
You know, the one thing I was thinking about as you were talking is the importance of being able to hold the tension between opposites, between opposite parts of yourself and opposite parts of your life. And I think there's never been a time when that's been more important than now, because we have such opposites in our culture that we've got to learn somehow to stand between those and just hold that tension and incorporate both into our lives.
Well, that was beautifully said. I really appreciate you again walking along on my first journey. It was like we're dropping your son off to kindergarten, probably. It was great having you along for the ride. Again, if you, Ray, mathis22@gmail.com, and you can find me at craigerichardson.com. And then for between now and in 2 weeks from now, I hope you have a safe and wonderful January.
Thanks for listening to Mind to Heart with me, Craig Richardson. My path has led me from the Protestant and Catholic churches, as well as studies in alchemy, mediumship, Eastern philosophy, and most recently, Edgar Cayce and transpersonal psychology. As an intuitive life coach, I am ready to guide you to an amazing life. For more information about me, visit craigerichardson.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.